Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. Now here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
Today we'll learn about AFGE's historic win in the Transportation Security Administration's union election with National President John Gage and Local 777 President Ricky McCoy, as well as Inside Government's five-year anniversary with Communications Director Enid Doggett. But first, President Gage addresses the media at his first press conference after AFGE's TSA election win.
It's a great time for our union and for the union movement. NTU put up a terrific fight in this, and they're damn strong union when it comes to representational elections, and it was really, I think, an heroic effort by both unions. I want to say that I thought that NTU did a very classy thing today, saying that they would not move to appeal the results of the election. It really is a classy move. In fact, AFGE, if we'd have lost, we were going to do the same, because I think that both unions, from their campaigns, know how desperately the TSOs need a union and need a contract. It was very interesting during the campaign, especially when gave some information of the vote totals. And as I was going around and talking to people, TSOs all over the place, there were just so many people that said, "Who are you going to vote for?" "I'm not going to vote for either one. I don't care which one comes in. We just need a union, and we want one of these unions." And other people, especially some of the younger ones, saying, "I can't make up my mind." And it was I think NTU probably felt the same thing. It was a little frustrating. Plus, of course, the access to TSOs is always difficult. It's kind of a one-on-one shot at bus stops and trains and in bathrooms and in food courts to try to get access to the potential voters. But so many, I'm just really proud of our activists and also of our union. You know, we fought hard back when TSO was first made. First organized, and fought hard that they be federalized, which they were. And when they came out and said that, well, they can't have a union, we never really admitted to that being a union member was detrimental to national security. And we kept representing them in whatever forums we could, and kept trying to organize them. And pushed hard to the Obama administration to get an administrator who would give this a fair look and afford collective bargaining rights. We have also kind of what's next. We've already put in motion a meeting with the agency to start discussing the transition and contract negotiations. We are putting a team on the road to visit ports all over the country, big and small, try to talk to get every TSO concerned to make this contract truly their contract. We're going to spend about 45 days in doing that and putting our contract proposals together and then submitting them to management. We hope it will be a very expedient negotiating process, and I am looking forward personally to leading that effort for a contract. We'll also be pulling all our activists and our locals together for kind of their first constitutional type of conference, where we'll set up a council of all our TSO locals and get a lot of the internal mechanisms together, elections and local constitutions and local jurisdictions, all that infrastructure that is necessary with a union as big as this. So we are very optimistic. I just got off the phone with a bunch of our TSO presidents and activists, and they are very enthusiastic about the outcome of this election. They fought and worked very hard to make it happen, and they are looking forward to bringing in the NTU people. You know, I had a reporter today ask me, well, will there be any animosity between NTU and AFGE because of this election? And I'll tell you, I really don't think so. We're going to be reaching out to NTU right away, and we have been even and been talking to NTU. Colleen and I have been talking about the threats that are that federal workers are facing in all the agencies. So I think we're going to pivot real quickly to a defense of the threats to federal employees. And I think what this election is telling both unions is we don't want to do this again. It was a really hard fought campaign by two really strong unions, and I think it was a fair campaign, and both unions should be proud that at least finally these TSOs will have a voice at work. So with that, I am willing to take some questions.
Joe Davidson from the Washington Post.
Hi, Joe.
Has Colleen given you a call to congratulate you?
You know, I'm out here in Utah, and I've really been on the phone a lot, and she hasn't. Although, I'm going to wait just a little while longer before I call her. But I can imagine that she's. This was a tough campaign, and it's a tough loss. But I thought it was very classy, her statement today that NTU would buy by the vote and would not appeal. But if I don't hear from her in a while, I'll give her a buzz.
Hi, it's Melanie Trotman from the Wall Street Journal. Can you tell us what your top three bargaining priorities are?
Well, the pay system they have, the evaluation of employees to qualify for pay increases is horrible. It's a fraud. We're going to lay a lot of sunshine on that through the bargaining process, but we really bargaining is not the answer. We have to kill that system. And I think putting out the how this system is used, any type of management that cares about their employees is going to realize that this system has to go. It has no credibility with TSOs. It is blatantly unfair, discriminatory, and it is absolutely no factor. It just is not a good tool in evaluating employees' performance. So the pass system clearly is number one, but there are just so many issues when it revolves around leave, shifts, seniority, and all those are and merit promotion are on an equal tier that we have some very good ideas about and have been interviewing. I've been talking to TSOs for the last 3 or 4 years specifically about those. So we have some recommendations that we'll put before our membership to get ratified to put through to management, and I think those are the areas that that are priorities: pass, shifts, leave, seniority.
And what do you think about Republican efforts to override the decision?
We're not going to take it. We're going to go down to Rakita's district. He put up that bill, and we are going to picket his office. We are going to demand a debate with him. I want him to stand up and say how being a union member is detrimental to national security. And these issues have all been fought out. Mr. Pistol was very clear in delineating the scope of bargaining, and I think it's just a hot dog move by this guy, and we're just not going to take it. This attack on working people's rights just can't go on. So that's what we're going to do, and I'm hoping that the rest of the Congress and certainly the Senate is going to see what this is. This has nothing to do with anything good for security. This is an ideological attack, and that's the way we're going to treat it.
Hi, President Gage. Louis LeBrecht from BNA.
Hello, Louis.
How are you doing?
Fine, thanks.
And congratulations. Anyway, I wanted to ask about, I know you talked a little bit about the difficulty of talking to TSOs and also. But I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the turnout was not really that much better in the turnout in the runoff election than it was in the first election. I was wondering whether is that because of the obstacles you mentioned, or are there any other factors?
Well, the big thing that I see, yeah, clearly access to these folks and the different shifts and, you know, 24-hour shifts are very, very difficult. It took us a lot of manpower, MTU and AFGE, to really try to get our messages out. But the thing that I found, and probably a big factor, well, there was two things. First of all, there was a group of people who were hired who just wanted nothing to do with unions. Put them aside, and that was reflected in the no union vote in the first election. But a lot of the young people and a lot of other workers, even some who had memberships with both unions, said, no, I'm not going to vote. I don't care. I like you both. Whoever wins, good. I just want a union in here. And as I was traveling, talking to people, well, did you vote yet? You said, no, we're going to have a union. Whichever one is fine. I think there was a large group of employees out there who really did vote, not out of apathy and not because they didn't want a union. They simply said a union is coming and we'll take either one.
This is Steve Losey at the Federal Times.
Hi, Steve.
How are you?
Fine.
President Gage, can you go into a little bit more detail about what your strategy is for getting rid of the past system?
Well, I can tell you straight out that, you know, when we went at NSPS, these scams, so-called pay-for-performance systems, when you get the statistics on them, and I can guarantee you the past will be the same. Now, we've got the 2008 statistics, and we're going after 2009 and 10. It will show that senior workers get screwed, minorities and women. And so we will attack it discriminatory basis if we have to. But I'm also hoping that we can lay out a very rational approach to management, that they can see that this system is not good for airport security. It's a morale killer. It kills teamwork. It's not fair. People have no credibility. It has no credibility with our officers. And I'm hoping that they will agree to move back to GS or to a system close to GS and do it quickly. There's no question that these officers, because of this system, that their base pay is $5,000-$7,000 less than it would be with GS. Now, if they say, well, it's a money issue, well, then they're really going to have to stand up and explain how they're saving money by taking it out of the pockets of their employees. That's not management efficiency. That's pretty close to theft. So we're very strong about getting rid of this system, and we're going to use bargaining tactics of putting sunshine on it, and also we're going to explore any legal actions we may have with discrimination, and we're hoping to also lobby Congress and explain to them how bad this system is, but we're really hoping that the TSA management, who has the authority to change it, will give up the ghost and move to something fairer for its people.
It's Melanie Trotman again at the Wall Street Journal. Just a follow-up. Currently, this past system you're talking about, do you want to eliminate evaluations being used to determine pay increases, or you want to eliminate, or you want to change the nature of the evaluations?
I would like to eliminate these types of evaluation for pay, especially for establishing pay raises. This has nothing to do with pay for performance. The performance on the job is only a small percentage of the overall past evaluator, you know, criteria. Most of it is through two tests that have nothing to do with when you work on the job. But these tests don't even tell the employees what they did wrong in order to improve. And they are adjusted after the fact, all based on a force distribution. In other words, we may have 10 people who test out as role models. We only have money for 3, so find something to take down the other 7 because we only have the money for 3. Now, that's not a pay-for-performance system. That is screwing your workers and putting up a sham of a system to just basically depress pay. And I don't really care who knows it or what, but we'll stand this system up to any type of scrutiny, and I wish the press would get into it and really look at how this thing works and don't get suckered by the bumper sticker pay for performance, because if anything, it is not pay for performance. So we feel pretty strong about it, Melanie. Yeah, we're going to go at it very hard.
Steve Losey, how many paid members do you have right now at TSA, and how many do you expect will sign up now that the...
it's really hard to say. You know, we don't have a dues checkoff, and it's very difficult. We don't have information on where they are, their addresses, or anything. So we have, I believe, about 10,000 people right now who are paying some form of dues. But we're looking now to really consolidate all that. Our locals decide their due structures, and we will be now formally setting up true constitutional AFGE locals, and we will be organizing like crazy, Steve. I'll say straight out, we want to really build off this momentum. We want these people, our TSOs, to really understand that in their job, you know, they really have to stick together. They have to have each other's backs. They really have to form. They really have to have the teamwork necessary to do this job. And we think a union really helps that idea, especially a police officer union. So we have a lot of experience in this. We think the culture of TSA going from this individual type of deal to more of a team concept is something that the officers are going to like. But as we move on our contract campaign, as well as our campaign to take down PASS, we're going to be aggressively organizing for members. And hopefully, too, we're going to bring in a lot of the NTU folks. I think that they're going to – I don't think there's going to be any rancor left, even though it was hard-fought on the work sites between our activist and theirs. I think now everybody's looking at that contract, that first contract. And so I'm very optimistic that we're going to get a great sense of unity and a very high membership out of it. I have a goal of this year getting 25,000 members on the board. But I think we can even do better than that. But I certainly would put that as a minimum.
What's the average monthly dues amount for AFGE TSO members?
Well, let me just say for AFGE, our convention set the per capita. That's the money that each local has to pay off each member's dues to support the national, the staff, the lobbying effort, the attorneys, the district offices, all that stuff. And that comes down to about $19 a month. So our dues in most of our locals and in the TSA, the minimum was about $10, and they probably went up to maybe $12-$13 a pay period, and that dues amount would hold in the establishment of these more constitutional locals. So that's the answer. They can pay anything, or their dues can be anything over $19 a month. The $19 a month is a minimum.
Joe Davidson from the Post again. AFGE received 8,900 votes, and there were about 43,000 people who were eligible. Does it say anything that that AFGE got about 20% of the eligible voters, and only in fewer than half of those eligible voted?
You know, I'll tell you, there was a lot of reasons for that. If you were out on the campaign trail. I certainly don't think it was necessarily apathy, even though many TSOs were disappointed in when Mr. Pistol put out his determination on the scope of bargaining, even though after we analyzed it and went through it and showed them that the scope of bargaining did address major concerns of TSOs. But I think there was a lot of people that would just say, I like both these unions, and whoever wins, wins. I've talked to people last week, who was like St. Louis and then Charlotte and Buffalo, who were good union people. Yeah, my folks were union people. I'm all for the union. You guys both sound good. I'll be with you. Just get this election over, and I'll be with you. And some of these people, a lot of them wouldn't vote. Plus, you have the younger people who, a number of them, and this is typical for federal employees, I'm not going to be here long, so I don't care, or I'm going to get promoted soon. And, you know, not being there long, 10 years from now, I'm sure, I just heard that story before. So some of the younger people, even though some of our top activists were younger TSOs, a lot of the younger people, it hasn't you know, especially the ones, and a great many of them, hired within the last year or so, haven't really felt the problems of being a TSO yet, or at least to the extent of some of the more veteran TSO officers have felt. So I was concerned about it at first, but, and I don't have any information other than anecdotally in talking with people, Joe, but it seemed there was a big body of people out there who just couldn't make up their mind between the two unions. They made up their mind on there being a union, but they didn't make, they just said, there's going to be a union and we'll take whichever one there is. And I think that was probably a pretty good chunk of the people who didn't vote. Of course, we had pockets where people were just, you know, and from their past lives, you know, were just anti-union, period.
Is there any concern that the fewer than half voted and then only about 20% actually voted for AFGE will affect your clout?
No, I don't think so. The people can see our clout. Well, you know, let them question it. I mean, I think there's going to be a unifying effort that's going to occur very quickly, and it's not going to be that like there's a split workforce. So I think we're going to earn our spurs, and I think people are going to see some changes fairly quickly, and it's up to us to do that. So every federal agency is like that, Joe. I mean, wherever you have elections in the federal sector, you know, the vote total is usually around this amount, and it doesn't stop us from really going from that point and building our penetration and the strength of the union, and by getting a good contract, and then you know, see, we're an open shop. It's not like private sector in where you can have it either an agency shop or a closed shop. So we have to earn our spurs every day through solid representation and communications, and that's what we're ready to do. We're gonna build up. I don't really care about the vote totals. I do care about the membership totals, and I think I'm very optimistic about that.
And were you saying that these vote totals were in keeping more or less in line with vote totals that are common in union elections? Was that the point?
I think so. In the ones I've been involved in, for sure, in the federal sector, yeah.
Yeah.
I think they were probably higher, you know, for instance, the Delta election was a little higher. But I think it was probably in line with others, and I'm not saying I'm real happy with it, but I also think there was a number of considerations that caused it. I think a lot of people were really intimidated too. I mean, there's really some of these airports where it's run very, very. I mean, if people would be stuck, you know. I mean, if they're seen talking to a union organizer, they felt intimidated from some type of. Really, still Neanderthal managers around, but so you add all that together, and there it is. But I think also we've built really a big cadre of people who are ready for a union and ready to stand up for their rights as union members.
John, Melanie Trotman again. Do you have a deadline for or a goal date for when you want a contract to be, you know, signed?
I'm going to do everything I can. I don't know if the agency has any. If they have any issues, but we're going to be driving to get proposals before management within 45 days, and my goal is to have a contract in place in 6 months.
Okay, thank you.
John, this is Mark Bruin, the Progressive Associates Union News, and I want to go back to the whole question of the vote totals, because I just looked at the first round again. It was basically 8,000 for you guys, 8,000 for NTEU, 3,000 for no union. You add that up, and it comes up to about 19,000, approximately 45% of the total. This time, take no union out of it, and we're talking 40%. That still sounds like there's a lot of people out there who are either apathetic or what?
There's a lot of people who didn't vote, either union, who want a union. So keep that in mind. Now, It's a different type of bargaining unit. A lot of people were hired from the military. Then a lot of people were also hired from law enforcement in the private sector. They were very strong for either AFGE or NTEU. Then there were the young people. So I think you have to take your bargaining unit as you, or the electorate as you find it. And believe me, there was a, if you'd be out there in those airports like I was, you could tangibly feel that people wanted the union, whether they felt comfortable in talking to a union organizer or not. Clearly, they saw the need for a union and wanted a union. Plus, the vote total was down, not the vote total, but the eligibility, the eligible voters were, I think, down some this time. I don't have a figure on that. I thought it was below 40,000, but Joe, you just said it was 42,000, I think. I'm surprised about that with the turnover and with the, I'm just surprised. I thought it would be considerably lower than that. But it is what it is. You know, I and our organizers, I think, in interviewing them, I think they felt the same way. That there, people certainly wanted the union. They were a little intimidated about standing and talking to a union organizer, and you know, after work, trying to grab them as they're heading for to catch a bus. It's also very difficult. Or in the morning when they're sprinting to get, you know, these people. And that's one thing. It's unbelievable how hard it is for a TSO to get to work. In some places. Boston, for instance, their parking is across the river from the airport. They just tore down the bridge. Now, it takes 45 minutes after they park their car to get to the airport. The TSOs get the worst parking in the airport. You know, food vendors have better parking than TSOs. And, you know, uniformly in the big airport, certainly, you know, parking is a major, major problem. So trying to get these folks to give you 10, 15 minutes to talk to, I mean, they don't have it. They're spending literally a couple hours a day commuting and at least an hour, in some places an hour, over an hour, after they park their car on in the only spot that they can park it. And to take the airport, you know, buses, which are completely, you know, it's just an inadequate situation. You know, during the snow, I mean, there's just so many horror stories about the parking and about access and TSOs trying to get to work. I mean, in New York at JFK, when during the snows, and the only way to get there is this train. It's the only way to get there. Train was down, airport, they're walking. They had to walk 2-3 miles, you know, to get to work because they didn't receive any notice that the airport was closing or anything like that. So this really has to be looked at, and that's going to take not just TSA, but it's going to take these port authorities, these airport authorities. They're going to have to look and do something about parking, or they're going to have to find a way to assist these people to get to work. But, you know, the AFL has a lot. We have seats on many of these airport authority boards, and we're going to try to raise that issue through there. But it's a huge issue. It's just a huge issue. And I tell you, I'm just struck by the dedication of TSOs across the country of, you know, of just what they have to go through to get to work. And they're a minute late, pow, AWOL. You know, pow, they're disciplined. It's really a tough league.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next we'll learn more about AFGE's historic TSA election victory with Local 777 President Ricky McCoy.
Attention AFGE members, government and military employees. Looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances? Purchasing power allows you to get items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. There's no upfront cash required, no credit checks, and AFGE members get a 6% discount. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. Call the AFGE Benefits line at 1-888-844-2343 today to see how much you could save. That's 1-888-844-2343. underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Attention AFGE members. AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Ricky McCoy, president of AFGE's TSA Local 777 in Illinois and Wisconsin. Ricky, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, brother. How you doing?
Great, great. Now, last week, Ricky, AFGE won its historic TSA union election. Talk about what this means to you.
Man, it means a whole lot. You know, we finally get a voice in the workplace. We finally get an opportunity to have some concerns heard, you know, at a national level as opposed to the local level with the AFSDs and the FSDs, Federal Security Directors, things like that. It kind of legitimizes us as far as Department of Homeland Security goes. Because we are like the only agency within the Department of Homeland Security that doesn't have collective bargaining rights as until that day. So it means a whole lot, man.
Rick, when you found out the news, what went through your mind?
It was crazy because I was at work that day, so I was actually waiting. I was waiting on the count. And, you know, I'm sitting around waiting, and I went on my lunch, and I actually started reading a comic book, believe it or not. And my phone started buzzing, and I looked at it. And when I saw, like, AFG wins, I was going crazy. We was all jumping up and down in the break room. But then one of the supervisors came and said, what's going on? I said, oh, we just got the election numbers back. And he's like, okay, just shut the door. It was crazy. I mean, it was overwhelming a little bit, you know, being here 9 years, you know, being with AFG, like 8 of those years, fighting for this stuff, things of that nature, and to finally have it coming to fruition, man, it was just wonderful.
And how did some of your members in Local 777 there in Illinois and Wisconsin react to the news?
Oh, it was crazy. Everybody still calling me now, waiting for a party, you know. So I told them, I said, man, you know, that was the easy part, the election. Because we all knew what was going to happen, you know. We were with AFG for a reason. We knew AFG was the quote-unquote team to be with, you know. I mean, just look around the federal sector, especially DHS. So we knew it was going to happen. It was just that anxiety of waiting on it. So when everybody finally came and said, you know, it's official, we won, these are the numbers, everybody, both states, it was just back and forth, phone calls, emails, texting, you know, it was just great, great all the way around.
Rick, I know you, and you're the kind of guy who likes to get right down to business and get to work. As a local president for AFGE's TSA members, what's your first order of business that you'd like to see taken care of?
The first order of business, of course, would be the GS pay scale, but realistically, that's something that will take a little bit longer because, you know, Congress has to be involved in that. But mainly, TSA's, the management directives and the policies that we abide by from state to state, airport to airport, even terminal to terminal, you know, it's not one accord. You know, everything is so different. It's hard for an officer to do his or her job when you don't know what rules you're going by. We have an SOP, but they don't follow it. So I was happy that the administrator gave us the opportunity to sit down and kind of hash some of that stuff out to take some of these words such as may or may not, you know, because supervisors and managers, when it comes to a word like may or may not, it's always going to be may not for them. So for us to have the opportunity to sit down and really kind of like right that ship, that's really what's most important. Because, you know, I tell the members all the time, it's one thing to get paid for what you do, but if you're getting a decent amount of money to do a crappy job, it's really, you know, it don't equal out. So us to be able to sit down and write, get into those policies and those management directives. Me personally, you know, you're probably going to interview some other people that won't feel the same way, but I think it's more important that we get our work life right and then the money will be okay. You know, AFG track record with the GS pay scale is phenomenal. So that's something that we really don't have to put too much thought in because it's already etched in stone. But to be able to sit down with TSA's management and kind of right that ship as far as those management directives and policies are going. That's what I'm really looking forward to.
Rick, talk about the unique situation that you have in Chicago working at O'Hare's Airport.
Well, it's unique in Chicago because we're Union Town. You know, we're Union Town. And like I tell everybody, if you're in Illinois or Wisconsin, it's either AFG or the Teamsters. So it was unique for us because things that couldn't happen in other airports, we were able to get a foot in the door because of the brotherhood, you know, with the AFL-CIO. And that's real unique to us in Chicago. I know we go to D.C. all the time, and we always talk about what we're doing in everybody airports. And when I say some of the – when I talk to the guys about some of the events and things that we're having, like we had a march up here where we just got all the brothers and sisters from the unions together, and we walked around the airport. That had never happened before in Chicago. And it was a TSA event. And all the people from the plumbers union, you know, the welders, bricklayers, they all came out. And, you know, that's one of the unique situations that we have being in a quote-unquote union town. You know, you really get the help from the big brothers and big sisters. They come out, you know what I mean? Because TSA O'Hare told us verbatim, now y'all can't have no rally. You can't have no walk. You can't do none of that. So I just went over to the Teamsters building, got with those guys, sat out with the plumbers and the carpenters. They said, okay, Rick, you can do it. Just give us the stuff. And you guys walk with us, y'all get in the front, and everything was great, you know. It's really unique being in a union town, Jay. You know, I tell everybody, if you're in one of those towns where the union has a big presence, you got to reach out to those brothers, because they're willing to help, you know, but you got to ask for it.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with AFGE TSA Local 777 President Ricky McCoy about AFGE's TSA election win. Ricky, especially in Wisconsin, which is an area that you represent, unions have been under fire, and a lot of legislators have been trying to silence union voices. How important is this election win in fighting back against anti-union sentiments?
Oh, it is real important, especially for Wisconsin, because, you know, they were going after the state employees. And we had to, you know, fellowship with those brothers and sisters to let them understand that, hey, they're going after you guys, but we're actually about to bring almost 2,200 federal employees into a collective bargaining agreement. So we had to make sure that our presence was felt more than ever in Wisconsin to let those legislators know we know how the game go. You're not going to start with the state guys and then move your way up to the federal. We're going to come at you as a whole so that you know we're all in this together, you know, and it's real important that people understand that it's not just a state thing. It's not just a federal thing. You know, it's a union thing. They're attacking unions. And any way, shape, or form that you can help somebody, even if it's just your leafleting, passing things out, walking, door-to-door knocking, we have to get out there and show that support, because that's the only way we're going to get these politicians to back up. You know, I tell people all the time, I understand they have a job to do, but you are not going to bring all this trouble that's in America down on unions, you know, and it started in Wisconsin, it trickled over to Ohio, you know, I know it's probably going to make its way to Chicago, but they're going to have a hard time coming here, but, you know, it's real important for people in Wisconsin to understand that it's just not a state thing, it's just not a local government thing, it's a union thing as a whole. And, you know, those guys out there with the farmers and things of that nature, the dairy farmers, you know, we walked out there with them and let them know what was going on and how it was going to happen. So, yeah, it's still prevalent, but they know they got a fight on their hands now. So,
Rick, earlier in the segment, you discussed a little bit about the desire to get into the GS schedule and away from, of course, PASS, which
right.
is TSA's pay-for-performance model. Talk a little bit about PASS and what it does to the worker.
Well, PASS is first of all, our pay system for TSA is man-made. It's a band as opposed to a scale. So that PASS, it's intertwined with that pay band. What PASS is, we have to be recertified every year and be proficient in the X-ray and our practical skills, which are the PSC evaluations. But those two components are 60% of PASS. So if you come to work every day on time with your uniform creased, know your knowledge and skill and all that, that's only worth 40%. If you don't pass your IMAs with a score of 90% or better, if you don't pass your PSEs with a score of 90% or better, you're not going to get a payout bonus at the end of the year. As opposed to the GS scale, you're ranked on a certain scale. Maybe it'd be GS 5, 6, 7, 8, what have you. Then you have step increases. We don't have step increases. The pass is, I'm glad you asked me that question, Jay, because with the pass, that money is always budgeted out at the beginning of the year, and it's a lot. They have budgeted like $22 million for pass. But if you go back and check at the end of the year after payouts has went to all the officers and everybody under pass, it never equals to $15 million. Where does the rest of that money go? You know, and that's one thing you have when you have these man-made pay for performance scales. You know, there's no way you can track that stuff. You know, that's why I tell everybody all the time, pass look good when you're a 1-2-year officer, because your first year, you're not even going to have to take the test because you've been recertified. You've been certified coming into the job. But after you've been here for like 2-3 years and you get with one of these lazy supervisors who don't want to move, so if you don't do that job, they're going to ding you on your score. Then you start to see that there's no transparency in the past. You know, it's really like, it's one of those things where like if you do, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Because I've been here 9 years, PASS has been around like 7.5. The first 2 years I got role model, which was like a $4,500 bonus, 2.5% increase. But if you think about it, they give you that $4,500 in a lump sum payment. Almost $1,100 goes back for taxes. So, you know, you're taxing a bonus, and then the 2%, you really don't get that because if you stop working, you don't see that money. So that's something real, you know, pass is a sticky situation because you can go to some airports like these smaller airports where they only got 9-10 officers. These guys think the world of pass because their supervisor and their manager, they're in a small town, so they all like, you know, they all pretty much on the same block. As opposed to when you go to these large airports and you start to expand, first of all, the supervisors don't even know how to grade pass. They turn their pass into somebody else. And then this individual will say, okay, you got to go back and change this, change that, and then you can give this person this score. That's not how pay for performance is supposed to be. So, you know, PASS is one of those situations to where we have to get rid of it. There's no way you can make it right. I mean, it can only get worse. PASS can't get any better. No.
Rick McCoy, president of AFGE's TSA Local 777. Rick, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Jason. Anything you need, man, just give me a call or shoot me an email.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll celebrate Inside Government's 5-year anniversary with AFGE Communications Director Enid Doggett.
Attention AFGE members. AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. Call the AFGE Benefits line at 1-888-844-2343 today to see how much you could save. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Enid Doggett, AFGE's Communications Director. Enid, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you for having me.
Now, this week, Enid, Inside Government is, of course, celebrating our 5-year anniversary. As someone who was involved with the program from its inception, what does this mean to you personally?
Personally and professionally, this is a triumph for the union movement in general. This Inside Government was one of the premier and first programs that was done on a regular basis, showcasing union activity as well as activity on issues that are going on in Washington, D.C.
you mentioned that it is a big step for the labor movement. Talk about how programs like Inside Government can really further the message of the labor movement.
I think one of the ways that programs do is that they protect the integrity of the individuals that produce and also are hosted on programs like Inside Government. There are now a number of programs that have followed in our footsteps. I like to think that in a way we are pioneers in terms of helping other union organizations and other radio programs in terms of finding another voice for folks in the labor movement.
And at a time when some legislators are trying to stifle the voices of union members, how important is it for organizations like AFGE to have a program like Inside Government to promote those voices?
I think it's very important that AFGE have a program to promote the voices. And as you know, we're a pretty diverse organization. We have a myriad of opinions on issues. We have a very diverse population, not just ethnically, but also in terms of political beliefs and religious beliefs, and also in ways in which the country should be directed. However, uniformly, there was a belief that people have the right to bargain collectively. I think that in terms of AFG Inside Government, this is a program where people air their thoughts about and concerns about issues of importance to working families.
Now, as you look back on the last 5 years, what are some memories that stand out to you?
Probably the most important memory that stands out to me is just how the show came about. It was conceived in the first few hours of the election of John Gage as president of AFGE. I went to meet with him to do a press briefing in the wee hours of the morning on the eve of his election, and one of the things he mentioned was he wanted a radio program. He wanted that radio program to be Inside Government, and here we are, 5 years later.
Enid, as you know, AFGE members have taken a strong interest in our program, tuning in each week, following us on our social media sites like Twitter and Facebook, downloading our podcasts on iTunes, and even subscribing to our YouTube channel. What does this say about the dedication of our membership to the program?
I think that this says a lot, not just to the dedication of our membership, but the dedication to people like you, Jason, who served as the producer and now host of the program for all of these years. And I think that the quality of the program and the variety of guests and the quality of the interview speaking for itself.
We would certainly be remiss if we didn't mention some of the very important people and councils that have been with us along the way that have shared their stories on Inside Government. Why don't you go ahead and talk to some of those issues?
Well, we've had everyone on the program from AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka to film producer James Cameron, who produced the Academy Award-winning Avatar, members of Congress, including Congressman Benny Thompson, of course, a myriad of AFGE leadership from our TSOs, who just won an impressive victory, as well as our Bureau of Prison Officers, our Social Security folks in various councils. One of the highlights most recently was a show that involved all of the council presidents for our Social Security councils, our field services director, Bill Fletcher, who is renowned in progressive circles, our D.C. government activist, Mayor Vincent Gray, now Mayor of the District of Columbia, and our folks in Veterans Affairs. And, of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention our Department of Defense activists and leadership, particularly Don Hale and Patty Veers. Also, our ICE and our Homeland Security folks as well. One of the things that I can applaud the show for is that we allow our members to tell the story. We maintain a level of integrity with the show by letting them state the facts as they know them rather than to try to coerce or to establish an opinion, but rather let the listener determine the opinion that they will have based on what our members say.
And wouldn't you agree, Enid, that that's almost the identical philosophy of AFGE as a whole, that it's a very much a ground-up institution, that we follow what the members want and we let them drive the conversation?
I think that it's imperative, I mean, for an organization that's as vast and that's really reflective of America as a whole in terms of its diversity, that we allow our membership the freedom to express themselves through something like this and to make sure that they feel a sense of ownership in this program, as much of a triumph as this is for AFGE National, as we're often referred to by our members. This show is a triumph of our membership and our membership's support for this type of program.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with AFGE Communications Director Enid Doggett. Enid, as someone who's been in broadcasting and communications for many, many years, how is radio, particularly internet radio, able to influence conversations people are having about the day's most important issues?
It's amazing that just even in the last 5 years that the technology has continued to grow and expand. I think when we started this program, roughly maybe 10% of Americans were tuning in on a regular basis to internet radio. Now, according to Pew studies, 49% of Americans are tuning in and getting their radio communications through the internet, be it a smartphone or a computer or now a booklet, a tablet rather. People are tuning in to radio, and in fact there were recent studies that showed that radio in general is more popular than ever, with 151 million people tuning in weekly to some type of radio program.
As I had mentioned earlier, we have grown from just being a radio show in the beginning to now almost a full service, all digital type of production, with social media presence, with an online video presence, with an iTunes presence. What do you think that says about how messages are being delivered to people these days?
I think that it says that people are looking for newer, faster ways, and that there is a concern that communication is not as personal, I think, with audio communication and the way that we are, through Inside Government, able to distribute to people on those platforms. We are creating a level of intimacy for our listeners and for our members who tune in on a regular basis.
Do you think that it speaks to the level of instant gratification that audiences are looking for now? They want what they want, and they want it now. They don't want to wait until the next day, until the newspaper comes
out. Well, you left this open for this commercial, and I have to say that you can listen to Inside Government on demand, anytime, anywhere. And I think that the vehicles that we supply our members get that message across. And a lot of them, I mean, there is no place that I go in this country or no one I talk to who has not heard of, who has not listened to AFG Inside Government and any form or any platform. It is something that is an emblem of pride that we produce and that they are a part of and contributors to this program, and also in the support that they give the communications department overall.
What do you see as a future for Inside Government?
I think that Inside Government is going to be in the landscape for a long time. It continues to gain respectability. It's a known entity to a lot of the major players in Washington, and it speaks to the level of guests that we're able to attract to the program, as well as the instant recognition when the show is on the road or we are among groups of other radio talk programs that are interviewing people, for instance, at the Capitol, at the Congressional Black Caucus, at Families USA, at Excellence in Government conference that's sponsored by the National Journal, that people automatically know who we are and that they tune in.
Thank you to our guests this week, AFGE National President John Gage, TSA Local 777 President Ricky McCoy, and Communications Director Enid Doggett. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife.